our report and recommendations have been informed. They've been informed entirely as a result of the cooperation and the cooperation of the Police Bureau and outside stakeholders that were important to our review. When we came to Portland, we were provided with all of the essential documents, but this kind of review needs more than a document review. It needs talking to people who were involved in the investigation, talking to people who were involved in the review, talking to people who were making command decisions in the Bureau and outside the Bureau, talking to folks like the auditor and the IPR head, and talking to outside stakeholders as well, like the Civilian Review Commission and other important folks that are interested in these issues that touch at the very heart of public service and intended to look at accountability issues with regard to the Police Bureau. And I can say that our experience over these past several months, we got started in March, our experience over these past several months have been remarkable with regard to the vigor, the time, the interest, and the cooperation that was provided to us by each of those individuals, primarily, particularly those in the Bureau, taking time out of their busy schedule, not only to meet with us, but to provide candid information about what went on in this case, the things that went right, the things that could have been better in retrospect. And to the degree that our review of this investigation is informed, it is reliant in large part on the insight that was provided to us by our review, both with people inside the Bureau, people in the city, and people outside that are interested in these very important issues. The second thing I wanted to say is that I think the public, and I introduce myself to the public who are interested here, again, is the degree of interest is demonstrative of a city that cares about oversight, cares about its police bureau, cares about how the Bureau has reacted to this unfortunate tragedy, how the Bureau has bettered itself, if they have, as a result of this unfortunate experience, this in-custody death. And it's testament to the city that the citizens of this city do care enough to take time of a wonderful summer evening, time out from that wonderful summer evening to come here and discuss and dialogue about what we learned from our report. The other thing that I wanted to say publicly is that I was impressed by the interest that has occurred all day, by the fact that Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, and others on this esteemed elected body took time out of their schedule to meet with us individually and privately and share ideas about ways to continue to improve the process and ways to continue to improve the Bureau and the way in which it functions and the way in which it investigates these type of critical incidents. The other thing I did want to provide is a little bit of context, and that is that, as we say in our report, while certainly we have a number of recommendations, and we're going to focus on that during the rest of my time, those recommendations have to be taken into context. By that I mean every review mechanism, every investigation can be subject to recommendations for reform, and we've done our best to try and provide a path to reform with regard to our individual recommendations. That being said, as we said in our report, the City of Portland and the Police Bureau in particular is well positioned to respond to our recommendations because there already is a robust review mechanism in place as a result of the hard work of Bureau members, Bureau command staff, and those that have come before, as well as the Commissioner's interest in accountability, the Commissioner's interest in ensuring a robust review of these type of incidents, and the historical legacy that the City of Portland has over the past few years had with regard to these issues has to be noted. That being said, I will turn to our recommendations and briefly go over each of them. We've grouped the recommendations by subject matter, and we will sort of group them in that way and talk about them in that way. We will start with the homicide investigation. And the homicide investigation is the investigation that's conducted immediately after the incident. And while we found the homicide investigation to be overall a good product, We certainly found room for reform, room for recommendations that we hope the Bureau considers in attempting to improve its already well-defined protocols. Specifically, we found that with regard to, and again, our focus was on the chassis incident, but with regard to the chassis case, what we learned was that the civilian witnesses who were, there were a number of civilian witnesses in this incident, were not interviewed contemporaneous with the incident, but were interviewed a few days later, and those interviews were not conducted face-to-face. Best practices suggest that whenever practicable, it's better to interview witnesses sooner in time rather than later in time, and certainly face-to-face interviews are desirable as opposed to a telephonic interview. So that is our first recommendation. Second recommendation is a more fundamental recommendation and one that we think is deserving of further study. Traditionally, police officers from the Bureau who have been involved in critical incidents, officer-involved shootings, have not been interviewed the night of the incident. Traditionally, it's been a day or two later in which those individuals are interviewed. We believe that, again, best practices would suggest that the Bureau consider working with its union, working with its elected officials, to reconsider that protocol and have a situation in which the officers are interviewed the night of and statements are taken from those officers before too much time has passed. The other recommendations are, some of them are document recommendations. The department does a good job of ensuring that officers are sequestered and transported from the scene readily, but we found lacking documentation to that effect in the homicide report. There was an issue with regard to the immediate cooperation of the private ambulance company that responded to the in custody, what ended up being an in-custody death after the force was used on Mr. Chassis. And that private ambulance company refused to talk voluntarily to homicide folks. And again, as a going-forward recommendation, we would hope that the Bureau and other interested bodies would engage in a discussion with that ambulance company in order to ensure cooperation in the future with future in-custody death investigations. We think that with regard to the rollout protocol, that's the individuals who automatically roll out to the location of critical incidents, that it would be helpful and important for Internal Affairs Division and the Independent Police Review representative to come out to those locations for different reasons. IAD has obviously changed over the past few years. It's become a more aggressive, active, investigative body. As we indicated in our report, traditionally IAD would simply repackage the homicide investigation. Those days are behind the city of Portland, and it's good that they are. But we think it would be helpful for IAD to get a firsthand knowledge of issues that appear from traveling to the scene rather than waiting several weeks before they engage in the actual investigation. IPR, I understand, is involved in discussions so that they would have an automatic role to these critical incidents, and we believe that that would be also helpful. One, to provide IPR with initial information about the issues as they unfold at the location. And two, I think having IPR there in a cradle-to-grave kind of review from its inception of any incident can provide additional comfort and confidence to the public that the police bureau is going to do an effective investigation, and to the degree that IPR can help and assist and ensure that there is an effective and objective investigation. Their being there from jumpstart, I think, would be helpful. And finally, there was some delay in the chassis case regarding the completion of the detective's notebook and handoff to IAD. That took several weeks, and ideally, the timeline would have been more abbreviated had those notebooks been completed in a more rapid frame of timeline. So those are the recommendations for homicide. Now we go to the internal affairs investigation. And with regard to the internal affairs investigation, again, part of the explanation for the time lag was that IAD resources, when the chassis case finally came over to IAD, we're not equipped to immediately begin an investigation of the chassis incident. And as a result of the backlog, It took several weeks before that investigative team could get started. Our recommendation looking forward is to ensure that IED resources are sufficiently available so that there wouldn't be a time lag of this significance in future cases of this magnitude. There was an investigative obstacle created by the reluctance of outside agencies, other government agencies, in allowing individuals involved in the chassis use of force to be interviewed by Internal Affairs Division. We thought it would be helpful, looking back at the case, that if in the future the Bureau experiences similar roadblocks in their investigation, that they at least notify and perhaps potentially enlist their commissioner and maybe the City Council as a whole to attempt to remove these investigative obstacles created by outside agencies. We also think that related to that, any discussions at this point before another in-custody death happens would be helpful and beneficial to try and gain cooperation now before the next crisis. With regard to cases in which there are roadblocks that are insurmountable, we believe it's incumbent upon IED to assess the cost-benefit of waiting for what may end up being an interview delayed several months versus the interest in having an investigation completed in a timely fashion. And that calculus should be made in cases in which it looks like a witness is not going to be available for several months. And finally, to as a sort of preemptive strike to prevent witnesses who may later become unavailable from not being able to get their story or get their version of incident, the homicide group perhaps should be, our recommendations, the homicide group should be thinking about that and questioning these individuals who are from other law enforcement agencies in a criminal context, so at least there is a statement that can then be relayed over to the administrative folks when the IED investigation goes forward. Finally, we have a few recommendations for the Use of Force Review Board, and again, I just want to emphasize that the Use of Force Review Board is a vibrant review board that has provided systemic reform and accountability to the City of Portland over the years in which it's been in practice. It's an evolving board. We understand that there are even new ordinances this year that will change the makeup and the way in which the board functions to some degree. We support those, by the way. But with regard to this particular case, as I'm sure many know, there was new evidence that came out of this case, at least came out publicly in this case, later in the investigation, and that is a videotape that ended up being enhanced that showed a conversation between involved personnel. Unfortunately, when this new information went back to the Use of Force Review Board, there was no updated training analysis with regard to the impact that this new information might have had on the training analysis. There were two other other recommendations coming out of our review that I think are related to that. One is that in our talk with Use of Force Review Board members, they were often in the dark with regard to the final outcome of any recommendations they made, be they systemic recommendations or individual recommendations on accountability. And what we recommend is that there be a feedback loop, an effective feedback loop, with regard to informing Use of Force Review Board members on the final outcome of the cases. By that I mean what the chief decides and even what an arbitrator decides, and even get feedback on the training recommendations and whether they've been implemented. The involved officer appearing at the Use of Force Review Board is something, again, that we think the Bureau should consider in as they redesign or continue to improve their Use of Force Review Board. Regarding policy recommendations, while there were a number of policy recommendations coming out of the chassis incident, and all of them were to the good, and again, the Bureau is to be commended not only for the adoption of the policy recommendations, I think there were eight of them that came out of the Use of Force Review Board, but their implementation. They were able to do things like provide mental health training to each of its officers in a very, very quick turnaround time, and I think it puts the Bureau in better stead and prepares the Bureau in a better way to respond to future incidents like this. More can be done, and I think more will be done. But with regard to some of the policy recommendations that we think may have been not given as much shrift as perhaps should have been done, we have three. One is that while we appreciate the medical transport policy and all of the information and all of the reform that has gone into that transport policy, we had pointed out some issues that suggest a revisiting of some of the language in that policy so that there's even better guidance and better definition about what the Bureau's responsibilities are for deciding how and where to transport injured arrestees. The foot pursuit policy has been revised, at least the training regimen behind the foot pursuit policy has been revised, but there hasn't been a concomitant revision of the actual policy. And we recommend, again, the Bureau consider revising its foot pursuit policy so that it's married up to what is actually being taught to its officers. And finally, we believe that the Bureau can only gain from continuing foot pursuit data collection and tracking, and we support the continuation of that data collection. We have some supervisory issues, the first one in our recommendations is one that deserves a little explanation, but we think it's very important and could have impacted the way in which this incident eventually worked itself out. And that is that, as everyone knows, and I'm not going to belabor the facts unless people need clarification, but as everyone knows, there were three officers involved in the use of force on Mr. Chassie after he was detained. It involved an officer. It involved a deputy sheriff from another agency who was working in the Transit Bureau at the time, Transit Division at the time. And it involved a supervisor, first-level supervisor, who, again, felt the need to use force on Mr. Chassie when Mr. Chassie was resisting arrest, at least in his impression, resisting arrest. Best practices suggest that when a supervisor is actually involved in a use of force incident, that when another uninvolved supervisor arrives at the location, that there should be a handoff of incident responsibility to the uninvolved supervisor. That did not occur in this case. We believe it should have occurred in this case, and we believe if it hadn't occurred in this case, there might have been better dialogue between the uninvolved supervisor and the ambulance folks so that the ambulance folks would have had better information available to them in deciding whether or not they needed to transport Mr. Chassie to the hospital. And because this didn't occur, we believe that it should occur the next time something like that happens. And that is an important recommendation. We also learned that internal affairs investigators were interested in learning about a potential defense that was actually raised in the Chassie case. In the Chassie case, part of the defense for the officer's actions was that the Transit Division had certain expectations of its officers, and the community had certain expectations of its officers who worked in that transit division. That is, to deal with issues involving community concerns about activity in the train stations, or near the train stations, near the bus lines, and that changed the way in which the Transit Division did its operations and perhaps caused officers to be more assertive in their acts of enforcement. And in fact, we have learned from our review of the documents and from talking to Bureau people that, in fact, that position was advanced in defense for the officer who was involved, in defense for his actions. Internal Affairs Division attempted to, or is considering following up on that issue to see whether, in fact, there were supervisory issues that should have been addressed as part of its review and ultimately part of the Use of Force Board review. But we were informed that the advice from people higher up in the chain of command was not to go there. So IED did not go there. And I think it left a significant gap in the overall review that was then presented to the Use of Force Board. We have some training recommendations. The transport of Mr. Chassie after he was placed in maximum restraints concerned us. The fact that he was transported in maximum restraints for quite a distance, that is, the distance in which he was chased was the distance in which he was carried back in maximum restraints while struggling back to the patrol car. There was no explanation given, and it really wasn't pursued as to why the patrol car wasn't simply moved to where Mr. Chassie ended up being detained. But we think that that would have been certainly a better way of handling this. And this fact becomes important when you look at the coroner's report and her conclusions that Mr. Chassie's injuries may have been exacerbated by him struggling while they were carrying him this length of distance. So we believe that the Bureau should consider this as a training and policy issue so that in the future, any transport of individuals in restraints is kept to a minimum, if at all, by law enforcement personnel. There has been some interest in learning about the crisis intervention team training that was provided as part of the reform coming out of this incident. And we believe that to the degree possible, that to the degree the public is interested in learning about this training, it could only help with the transparency to provide that training to the public to the degree possible. And finally, we have seen the Bureau do in the past very good training videos on in-custody deaths, and we hope at some point that the Bureau consider using this case as a basis for a similar training video. Finally, we have some personnel recommendations. In this case, as people know that are familiar with the case, the deputy who was involved in the use of force incident and prior to the investigation being over ended up being hired by the Bureau. And the fact that he was hired while there was a pending investigation is something that does not comport necessarily with best practices in our experience in other jurisdictions. Usually, there will not be a hiring decision on a major use of force case when the individual is still a subject of a pending investigation. And we are not suggesting that the deputy shouldn't eventually have been hired, but while the investigation was pending, we're not sure it makes sense to make that hiring decision at that time. And finally, we understand now that there is a regular policy with regard to how to deal with a situation in a pending investigation with officers involved in in-custody deaths. In the past, what to do with that officer during the pendency of the investigation has been primarily ad hoc decisions, subject to criticism both from within and outside the Bureau. There is now a more systemic policy that we understand is going to be extended to officer involved in custody deaths, and we support that recommendation. Regarding transit, we've talked a little bit about transit already, but we do see a problem with transit and the challenges presented with transit with regard to it being a multi-jurisdictional agency. As a result of it being multi-jurisdictional and the fact that there is no accord on what the policy should be with regard to critical incident response, we fear a potential disconnect between the way in which agencies that are not Bureau members who are not members of the Transit Bureau, Transit Division, who are not members of the Bureau, might be working off a different set of rules, different set of policies, different set of training, as opposed to Bureau members. And we believe that since they're partnered up, that this could provide a disconnect and potential issue with regard to how, with regard to the coordination that one would expect in responding to critical incidents. And we recommend that the Bureau take a hard look at this and work with participating agencies to try and come up with a common core of policies, tactics, and training, and provide that training to all people coming, all officers coming into the Transit Division. Finally, with regard to IPR has evolved over the 4 years that it's taken to investigate and review this case, meaning the Chassie case. But we applaud the evolution and the more prominent role that IPR has played over the years in 2010. And we think that that should only continue. Our recommendations is to have IPR, as we said, roll out to critical incidents and establish a more visible and public presence during the pendency of any investigation, so that not necessarily provide premature information, but to provide assurances that the IPR is a robust participant in overseeing investigations and ensuring that at the end of the day, that those investigations are complete and thorough. I have spent a little bit of time going through these recommendations, and I know I've covered a lot of ground, but I wanted to make sure we covered as much ground as we could in the time we have. Obviously, we are obviously here to respond to any comments, questions from this esteemed elected body, as well as anyone else who has interest in our report. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Giannacco. And I'm going to see whether my colleagues have any questions at this point. And then when we conclude hearing from other panels and members of the public, we may actually invite you back if there's some questions on the table. But let me first inquire whether my colleagues have any questions. Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz?
I'd like to. Go ahead, Mayor Adams.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Mayor.
In terms of what has been, first up, I want to thank you for your work and for taking the time to meet with me as part of the report, as part of your report writing and information gathering. What do you have any concerns about the reforms that have been made by the Bureau thus far, either that they are inadequate or in the wrong direction? And if you don't mention them, then anything in particular, then I assume that they're headed in the right, a particular reform is headed in the right direction.
What I would say to that, Mayor, is that when we issued our report, we had some discussions with the Bureau almost immediately after, and we found them very receptive to our recommendations, and we believed that they were giving our recommendations a thoughtful review. I want to contrast it with another experience I had involving another agency who I will not name, but we issued a similar report involving another agency, and within an hour, the head of that agency indicated that he intended to implement all 20 of our recommendations by the end of the day. We worry about those kinds of responses because our recommendations are simply that, recommendations. There's sometimes a lot of thought that needs to go into the implementation of those recommendations as to how it's going to be done. Or there may be some times in which our recommendations just don't work. But the reflection that we received from the Bureau and continue to receive from the Bureau about our recommendations, I think, is heartening to us, Mayor, rather than disappointing. Just as yet one more example, just yesterday we got a call from the commander of the Transit Division to talk with us further about some of our recommendations. So we think the Bureau is well positioned to work towards reform consistent with our recommendations.
Thank you.
So at this point, we're going to excuse this panel. Thank you, and ask you to obviously stick around. And I understand Chief Mike Reese and his guests will be invited up next. And then we have another panel in the queue. Welcome, Chief Reese.
Thank you. And Gerald Walker.
You could introduce your guests, and then I'll leave it to you, sir, for the sequence.
Thank you very much. Gerald Walker with Cascadia, and Eric Hendricks, our Assistant Chief of Investigations, are with me tonight. Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to address City Council tonight. My name is Michael Reese, and I'm the Chief of Police for the Portland Police Bureau. I want to thank the OIR Group and City Auditor LaVon Griffin-Vallade for this thoughtful and professional review of the investigation into the death of James Chassis. As we all know, the tragic death of James Chassis had a profound impact on the city of Portland, including the Chassis family, members of the Portland Police Bureau, and the community at large. This death touched all of us deeply. It caused a wide gulf between the community's trust and the police. It is my hope that as we move forward, we can now attempt to reconcile some of the pain and loss felt over Mr. Chassis' death. As Chief of Police, one of my top priorities is to rebuild the trust between the people we serve and the men and women of the Portland Police Bureau. This report and the changes that the Bureau has implemented since 2006 are a beginning. Following Mr. Chassis' death, the Police Bureau acted quickly on revising a number of policies and procedures. Many of these revisions are listed as recommendations in the OIR Group's report. Rather than review each recommendation, I would like to highlight some of the positive changes the Bureau has made since 2006 that are in line with some of the recommendations made by the OIR group. In 2007, the Bureau hired a mental health professional whose responsibilities include the development and implementation of best practice procedures in connection with officers' contact with mentally fragile individuals. This mental health professional, Dr. Lisbeth Gerritsen, acts as a liaison for the Bureau to mental health groups, attends the Bureau CIT Advisory Committee meetings, works with individuals with mental health issues, as well as families who need assistance. She also continues to work closely with Project Respond and other mental health providers. As of December 2008, all officers and sergeants in the operations branch, which included 540 Bureau members, were trained in crisis intervention techniques. This was a very large undertaking, but one that I believe was critically needed. We've also reviewed our tactics in the area of foot pursuits. The Bureau provided a refresher course in foot pursuits with emphasis on outlining factors that should be considered at the onset of a pursuit, including the severity of the crime. Another major change was in regards to the Bureau's policy involving emergency medical custody transport. In 2007, the Bureau conducted a complete overhaul of the policy and procedures surrounding the evaluation and transport of prisoners who are possibly injured or suffering from a medical condition. In addition, the Bureau's training division produced a roll call video in 2007 in regards to transporting a person in maximum restraints, and we continue to reevaluate this practice. We have met with our partner agencies and are working closely with TriMet to forge a pilot project where a joint investigation is conducted when multi-agencies are involved. I agree with the majority of recommendations in this report, and we have already implemented or soon will many of them. These include changes in procedures to our internal affairs and use of force review boards. I believe the Bureau is a better organization now because of the changes we have made over time since James Chassie's death, including how we respond to people with mental health issues. Today's patrol officers have a difficult job as they try to balance public safety, neighborhood livability issues, and community expectations on how we assist people with who are struggling with drug addiction, mental health issues, and homelessness. We have entered a new era of law enforcement where police officers are often first responders to individuals who would have otherwise been helped by a more adequately funded mental health system. These complex problems are not easily solved by officers with limited resources. The community has high expectations of how officers should respond and treat these individuals with mental illness or addictions, but they still want officers to enforce laws that maintain neighborhood livability. Officers must weigh several factors when enforcing these neighborhood livability crimes, and they need to be more mindful about looking at the totality of the circumstances. There will be times when we need to take enforcement action as these livability issues greatly affect residents and businesses. However, in today's world, we must do so in a more thoughtful and collaborative manner using partners such as Transition Projects, JOIN, Central City Concern, Cascadia, Project Respond, and the faith community. The Police Bureau is fortunate to have talented, hardworking professionals who make positive impacts on the people we meet every day. I am confident that we will continue to make great strides in this area with the help and support of the community and our social service and mental health partners. Finally, we must continue to improve our after-action processes, which include internal affairs and the use of force review process. I agree with the report's findings that the timeline of the internal investigation was completely unacceptable. I pledge to work closely with IPR and the community to monitor the progress of investigations into the use of deadly force or in-custody deaths to ensure that they are completed in a timely manner as quickly as possible given the complexity of this type of investigation. The OIR group noted that we are a learning organization, and this report will be a useful tool to continue to implement best practices. Law enforcement is an ever-changing field as equipment, tactics, laws, and expectations continue to develop. We are committed to continuing to be a progressive and transparent organization, always searching for better ways to serve the community. We cannot change the outcome of what occurred on September 17, 2006. I am very sorry for this tragic event and the suffering it has caused. I want to reassure the City Council, the Chassis family, and the community that the Police Bureau will continue to evolve and learn, as well as ensure that we have the proper and best policies and practices in place. Thank you again for providing me with the opportunity to address this report.
Chief, can I just, before we move on to another invited guest, can I ask a clarifying question?
Absolutely.
You indicated in your testimony that you agree with the majority of the recommendations in the report.
Yes.
What is your intention in terms of communicating with the council and the public as to specifically those recommendations that you agree with and the steps that you're going to take? And to the extent there's a recommendation that you either don't agree with or you have a slightly different view of how to get there, and you go a slightly different direction, what's your intention in terms of communicating that to us and to the public?
We've provided council already with a written report response to the recommendations by the OIR group, and I will continue to do that as we implement changes. I think that, again, we agree with the majority of the recommendations from OIR group and have implemented many of them as ongoing processes since 2006. I think Chief Sizer did an incredible job in looking at this very quickly, this incident, and making immediate changes to the organization, including the CIT training for practically everyone in the operations branch of the Portland Police Bureau. With the few items that we are, I wouldn't say we disagree. I think that there are some areas that we have to continue to evaluate. Having on-scene IAD investigators and IPR, that's a process piece. We tried having IAD and the training division respond immediately to these. And they're chaotic scenes. They take a while to work through. The detective division and the DA's office control the scene and access to them. I've had conversations already with Mary Beth Baptista, the director of IPR, about having the IPR director roll out and having that civilian oversight. And I think as part of the stakeholders group with the IPR, we will continue to look at that as probably the best model for civilian oversight of the entire process. I think the ideas around the Transit Police Division, including having a meeting with our partner agencies and TriMet to work out policies that ensure that there's accountability in internal affairs processes, which is the major stumbling issue that we see in these types of investigations. Everybody has their own protocols and policies. And as we saw in this investigation, other agencies limited access to our ability to interview people. That needs to be worked out, and we have to have written policies in place. Again, I think those are things that I need to share with council as they occur and have a written response in place that we give you periodically updates on how that looks.
Thank you, Chief. Who wants to go next?
Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fish, and Commissioner Fritz. I'm Darrell Walker. I'm the CEO for Cascadia Behavioral Health. Cascadia is one of the larger nonprofits in Oregon. It serves essentially as a safety net provider for the greater metro area within the Portland, Multnomah County area. One of the programs we provide that is critical on this matter is Project Respond. It's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week outreach program that's staffed by qualified mental health professionals. Since the Chassis tragedy, those of us at Cascadia have kind of witnessed a wake-up of issues on the streets with people that are vulnerable due to their mental illness. I think there's been a huge change in being aware of the problem, focusing on the problem, and working collaboratively to try to address better services to those individuals. Some of the things we've seen change since that time was the CIT training that Chief Reese has mentioned that consists of 40 hours of all the patrol officers, including the sergeants. Difference in and training in the foot pursuit procedures, and also just a general increased consciousness and awareness by police officers within the Bureau of the possibility that the people that they're encountering as a first responder may have a mental illness. Also, I think there's a heightened awareness on everybody's behalf of that initial blink, for lack of a better term, reaction to a situation on the street where things are unfolding literally in fractions of a second. I think there's a greater sense of awareness that multiple factors may be in play, including possibly dealing with somebody with a mental illness. I also think there's a greater awareness in the fact that jail is not the answer to these individuals, that there are other systems that better serve them. What we see is a much greater openness by the police department. Portland has the benefit of being chosen as one of five cities in the United States to be studied by the Bazelon Center for Mental Health Law, which is a national mental health law project based in Washington, D.C. The other cities are Detroit, Pittsburgh, White Plains, New York, and Austin, Texas. One of the reasons Bazelon chose us to study is the relationship, close collaborative relationship between the police bureau and Cascadia Behavioral Health as a safety net provider. Bazelon came to Portland earlier this year, did an initial review of data systems, met with Multnomah County data specialists, as well as data specialists within the police bureau, and reported back to me quickly that they were extremely impressed by the police bureau's openness and willingness to share data and information, something that they have not necessarily found in some of the other participating cities. I think there's a much greater communication between Project Respond and other elements of Cascadia and the police bureau, although, quite frankly, I think that in the last few years of my tenure has been good, but I think it's just increased with time. Also, earlier this year, this spring, we started a pilot project pairing one of our qualified mental health professionals, our Project Respond specialists, with a police officer during the day to identify, prior to an actual crisis on the streets, individuals that may be at risk of developing greater problems and precipitating the kind of crisis that the tragic death of Mr. Chassie illustrates. The police have been extremely cooperative in that respect and genuinely interested in improving the system and also reaching out to us as mental health professionals for advice on how to handle cases, how to identify cases earlier in the process. Earlier also this year, I was invited along with nine other Portland citizens to participate in essentially a 24-hour citizens academy for the police department, which gave me the opportunity to understand what police officers are faced with on the streets. I also spent on the 4 to 11 or 1 a.m. shift with an officer on the streets, mostly downtown in the Old Town area. And I was, a lot of the time, the officers didn't know who I was. They just figured I was a regular citizen doing a ride-along. I was repeatedly impressed by the patience and compassion that officers demonstrated that night as they were faced again and again with people that were homeless and or mentally ill or drug affected. Also, we've seen a significant increase in walk-in. In addition to providing Project Respond, the 24-hour crisis, we also at Cascadia provide a 15-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week walk-in clinic where anybody can come in. We found that the police are increasingly transporting individuals to the walk-in clinic for services that they think may benefit from seeing a mental health professional. And there are many other things that I think represent an improvement in the relationship between social service providers like Cascadia and the police bureau. But in addition to that, earlier this year, we also added to the Cascadia Behavioral Health Board of Directors, police captain from the bureau, Donna Henderson, which I think illustrates the close collaborative relationship this agency feels with the police department. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, Mayor Adams.
Just move that over a little bit if you would. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. As the Chief said, I'm Assistant Chief Eric Henderson, Investigations Branch, and I want to talk a little bit about Daryl's comments on the Baselin project. I've been Chief Reese's representative on the steering committee of the project for the last 3 or 4 months, since May of this year. And in my almost 25 years in law enforcement here in Portland, I can't think of but a few things that show the greatest promise for improvement of service delivery of the police bureau and the mental health community to the mentally ill on the street. It's an exciting project. There's great research being done. We're moving forward. Commissioner Fritz sits on the steering committee with me and a number of other folks, and it's valuable work, and it shows, I think, great promise for improvements here in the city of Portland. I'm looking forward to continuing to sit on that committee. As part of my duties in the investigations branch, I oversee the detective division, and once again, I'd like to thank the OIR group for their extremely thoughtful and thorough and thought-provoking recommendations and report. I've been involved in a number of lengthy conversations with Julie and Mike, and lengthy several hours, I think, altogether over a period of a couple of months. And they've caused a lot of thought on my part and a lot of conversation in the chief's office about how to implement these recommendations. And as a result, I have 4 of the recommendations that involve the investigations branch, the detective division. They're the division that's responsible for the investigation of officer-involved shootings and officer-involved or in-custody deaths. And I've sent the OIR group's recommendations directly down to the commander of the detective division to review and to return his comments to me, and not only review, but see how we can implement those recommendations in the detective division standard operating procedure, as well as in our bureau directives. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Questions from my colleagues? Mayor Adams? So thank you. We'll bring on our next panel. Thank you
very much,
gentlemen.
Thank you.
I understand from LaVon, I'm going to invite up the next panel, which I believe is the 4 people you identified. So that would be Michael Bingham, Dan Handelman, Debbie Iona, and Jason Renault. If the 4 invited guests would come forward. Is this the last panel? Okay. And so we'll move to public testimony after this panel. Welcome. Good evening. It's been a long day. I know some of you have been with us since early this morning. You know the drill. We're going to ask you to just state your name for the record. And we have a 3-minute time limit, but we'll be willing to go over that. I see the auditor is signaling me that we'll give you 5 minutes. So we'll operate with the 5-minute rule. And who'd like to start? Mr. Renault?
I'm Jason Renault. I'm with the Mental Health Association of Portland. In general, the Mental Health Association of Portland supports and appreciates the report on what happened to James Chassie. It's what we expect from a diligent police commissioner in response to a critical incident. The OIR report contains a tiny, potent argument, which we'd like to look at. It's designed to diffuse criticism surrounding the brutal death of James Chassie, and it goes like this. It's on page 1. It must be recognized the Portland Police Bureau of 2010 is not the Portland Police Bureau of 2006. Now, that's nice rhetoric, but it's entirely superficial to the interest of justice. The interest of justice remains fixed on September 16th, 2006. In almost 4 years, no police officers have been held accountable. 2 weeks paid leave is not accountability. No indictment, no crime, no personal accountability. The mayor, the police commissioner, the police chief were irrelevant in this process. They were without powers, without the ability to manage. Almost 4 years, no one has been held accountable for the brutal death of James Chassie. No human being, no person No person directly responsible for his death. No person who tackled him, kicked him, punched him, tasered him. No person named Kyle Nice. No person named Brett Burton. No person named Christopher Humphreys. No persons. Until you have the powers to act publicly and decisively in response to a critical incident about persons, you cannot give us assurance that what happened to James Chassie will not happen again. Understand this, James Chassie had a mental illness. Stipulate that the mental illness, the mental health system is in a bad shape. That's why our organization has been concerned about what happened to him for the past 3.5 years. But Jim did not die of his mental illness. It played no part in his death. To blame him, to blame his illness, to blame the mental health system for his death is intentionally misleading. What happened to James Chassie is not a failure of the system. It's not a failure of the institution or of the city. It was an unforgivable failure of 3 individual officers. You have tried to shoulder some of that burden because of the police contract, because of concern over a civil lawsuit, because of your uneasiness with authority, because of your antagonistic relationship between the police and civilian oversight. But it's not a burden to be shouldered. It's a stain. What Humphreys and Burton and Nice did is unforgivable. They will never be trusted by the public as police officers. Their colleagues who work with them will be stained. When you speak about their right to privacy, their right to a career, when you represent them legally, you also become stained. The task of a politician is to give the human voice to the law, to the policy and procedure, to speak to the community about the actions of the city. You and your predecessors were ill-advised to be silent. That duration of silence eroded trust and confidence. But here we are with this great report and new people, new leadership, so these things seem to be changing. The acceptance of the recommendations of this report is not the last step in this process, but really the first step. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Renaud. Mr. Bingham, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Fish, Mr. Fritz, my name is Michael Bingham. I'm the chair of the Citizen Review Committee. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you on the acceptance of the James Chassie Report, commissioned by the City Auditor and prepared by OIR. In October of 2007, I had an off-the-record conversation with a highly placed member of the Portland Police Bureau. This person confided to me that the James Chassie internal affairs investigation had been completely stalled for the prior 6 months because the attorneys for Multnomah County had refused to allow Portland Internal Affairs Division to interview the Multnomah County deputy involved in the incident. It was evident to me that this official was genuinely angry and frustrated that the investigation had been halted, and he was concerned that that determining the real truth behind the death of Mr. Chassie lessened with each passing day. I approached the then director of IPR and asked if she was aware of that problem. She said she was and that her office was monitoring the situation. Although I was appalled that the Chassie investigation was going nowhere, I did feel that because this was an ongoing investigation and that the information had been given to me off the record, I had to treat my knowledge as being confidential. Maybe, too, I was hoping vainly, as it turned out, the IPR would apply some pressure to get the investigation moving again. As some of you may recall, a few months later, Hank Miggins, Lauren Erickson, and myself asked that several TriMet intergovernmental agreements be pulled from the consent agenda because of our concerns of accountability of officers of other jurisdictions when working with the transit detail within the City of Portland. Our intervention was in large part a result of the problems of the Chassie investigation. I'd like to thank the mayor for forming a work group of involved police agencies to hammer out solutions to those accountability issues. We did some good work, but in the end, we're able to resolve, for me at least, the central issue, that of making officers from outside agencies available to internal affairs for interviews on complaints or major incidents. The OIR report is an excellent report, thoughtful and thorough, and I'd like to commend their organization for their hard work and commend City Auditor Griffin Favaldi for having the courage and integrity to commission it. But the sad fact is, taking 4 years to gain some kind of resolution to Mr. Chassie's death is outrageous. This exercise in bureaucracy has not served Mr. Chassie, his family, the Portland Police Bureau, the involved officers, or the community. There's a lot of blame to go around, but the fact that Multnomah County and AMR decided to place liability concerns over the search for truth is beyond the pale. I hope that we can learn a lesson from Mr. Chassie's death, and to that end, I would like to support the enactment of all recommendations in the OIR report. I'd like to take just a moment more of your time to discuss a couple of them in depth. The Transit Division needs greater command and control. Officers from different jurisdictions need to heed common policies and procedures in patrol tactics, reporting, and the use of force. They should be trained as a unit. The different jurisdictions need to come together and agree on procedures for investigating complaints and holding individual officers accountable. Most importantly, those officers must be made available to Internal Affairs for their interviews. One of the recommendations of the CRC Park Work Group was that IPR personnel roll out to the scene of critical incidents and monitor the investigations from day one. I'm pleased to see that the OIR report echoes that recommendation. It's not that I feel that the homicide detectives and IAD investigators don't do a good job, quite the opposite. They're consummate professionals and all too often end up being the scapegoats. Rather, I think that dispassionate oversight can help find gaps in the investigation and later on, when the process moves into the review phase, cut through the bureaucracy and delays. And sometimes a little political muscle is needed to ensure the process proceeds efficiently and at a reasonable pace. In conclusion, I feel that James Chassie's death was a tragedy, but I also feel it shouldn't have happened, the tragedy that shouldn't have happened. And hopefully through this review, maybe it won't happen again. Thank you for taking the time to hear my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Bingham. And let me address one matter that you alluded to in passing, which is your concerns with the agreements between the city and TriMet, mm-hmm. our governmental agreements. And as Mr. Handelman knows, we actually had that on our agenda this morning mm-hmm. for a renewal of an agreement. I did check since then I have checked with the city attorney, and this matter will be reset for next Wednesday, and we'll be putting that on the regular agenda. Thank you for your testimony.
You. Mr. Commissioner Fisher, may I just ask a question? Mm-hmm. We've made some improvements, a lot of improvements, in the independent police review process, and you have been very helpful on the Citizens Review Committee. Do you think that what we've done so far would address the concern that you experienced in 2007? Would we now know when a process was stalled, and would you as a citizen have the ability to bring that to somebody's attention?
Well, I think, to be honest, in 2007, the director of IPR knew it was stalled then. But I think the IPR today is much more assertive and much more aggressive in terms of dealing with that. And I think to that point, yes, it would be.
But if the IPR director were to change, or are the processes in place now so that the Citizen Review Committee would know and be able to take some action? Or is that something that we still need to work on?
I think it's something we need to work on, because I didn't find it out from IPR. I found it out from somebody within the Bureau.
So there perhaps needs to be some timelines and check-ins that put in place in your ongoing process that the Internal Affairs Division would be required to report and document to IPR, to the Citizen Review Committee, perhaps to the Council at regular interviews as to where they are.
I think that would be a good idea.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Handelman.
Good evening, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, and Mayor Adams. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and this is some testimony about the James Chassie Jr. incident report. We're generally pleased by the OIR report about the Chassie case and investigation, particularly that it addresses police behavior during the incident as well as the investigation. Overall, we agree with most of the recommendations, but wish some of them had gone farther. In addition, there are some good things, a few questionable things, and what appear to be a few missing things. Among the good things are the following. OIR recommends that officers not be able to carry suspects who are in maximum restraints, or in other words, they should have not tossed James Chassie about like a sack of potatoes. They suggest that medical personnel can be called to put an injured person on a gurney so their weight is properly supported. OIR recommends getting agreements with other agencies involved in TriMet, which we've just been talking about. And as I said this morning, it may be time to look again at having TriMet have its own agency somehow that could be responding to an elected body of some sort with a strong working accountability system instead of having all these piecemeal forces with different